My guest for One-on-One this week is Canadian native Glenn Emery, who was one of the first foreign entrepreneurs to begin operating in the Prague pub trade shortly after the Velvet Revolution. In the early 1990s, Prague had a reputation as a new left bank, as thousands of young American and other Western expats descended on the city, attracted by cheap beer and the exuberant atmosphere that surrounded a society which was busy letting its hair down after 40 years of communist oppression. One of the focal points of this new bohemian scene was Joe's Bar, which Emery opened in 1992 and which had a well-deserved reputation as a hotbed of unrestrained hedonism. Emery was also one of the owners of the notorious Reprate Club in Prague's famous Art Nouveau Obecny Dům building, and the nearby Thirsty Dog pub, whose crazy atmosphere was famously celebrated in a song by Nick Cave. When I met up with Glenn in a slightly more sedate, contemporary Prague cafe, I started by asking him what he remembered of the euphoria that had engulfed the Czech capital when he first moved to the city in the summer of 1990.
It was going on all around. Everybody was partying. I mean, we used to go down to Mustek, and basically it was a free-for-all. The police were gone. There was no police anywhere because right after the revolution, they kind of went into hiding. So there was no cops, and basically there was just, it was like chaos. It was very anarchic, but in a good way. There wasn't, you know, it wasn't like people were out robbing the shops or robbing each other. It was just people were having a good time. On Mustek, people would sort of set up shop, and they were selling anything from, you know, from beer, Becherovka, porn mags, and chewing gum, you know, whatever, everything in between. You know, and so you'd go down to Mustek and grab a beer, and we'd stand around and just watch the goings on, and it was like a circus going on every night. And I remember one night a couple came out, and I didn't really notice at first, but then the crowd gathered around them, but they put down a picnic blanket, and then they started making love on the square, and they were high-fiving each other and switching positions, and then they finished up and packed up their gear and left to a big uproarious applause, you know, so you don't see that every day.
I don't think you came very much money on it. You ended up owning and running a bar. How did that come about, and what made you decide to go into that?
I realized that there was a demand, you know, a big hole in the market, put it that way, for an expat bar. And I thought to myself that I should open a bar. So I went looking around, and I got a hold of some finance, and I went to the banks, and I ended up getting a loan, and I found a space, and it all sort of, you know, happened quite quickly. I think by February of 92, I was looking for a place. By April of 92, I'd found the place on Malostranský náměstí. And then I started reconstructing that, and we got it open in November 6th, 1992.
Joe's Bar actually became a fairly famous pub, was even like cited in Newsweek. What are your most abiding memories of those days in Joe's Bar?
There's endless stories. It was a lot of nudity, yeah. A lot of weird stuff was going on in the back room. But favorite memories, I don't know. I mean, the general, you know, memory or feeling that I have about the whole Joe's Bar was, and also you got to sort of put it in a perspective, because you know, you think about it, we're sitting here, we both have our mobile telephones on the table, and you think to yourself, Jesus Christ, how did I get along back in 92 without a mobile telephone? And of course we did, and one of the ways that you did it was you would go to a place like Joe's Bar, because you knew when you went there you'd meet 5 or 10 of your pals, you know, every time. You didn't have to call down, you didn't have to just go there, and you knew you'd meet people. So it was kind of a meeting place. It was a big hangout for a lot of the expats. But I mean, so many strange things happened there. I mean, there was all sorts of nudity and sex and fights and you name it. I mean, just, it was, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll to the extreme going on every night, sort of thing. So it was pretty wild time. And it was euphoric too. You know, Prague basically was reinventing itself after the revolution politically and sort of socially. And so a lot of people, young people, were coming through Prague, myself included, and sort of reinventing ourselves. And it was kind of like a rebirth, you know. It was like, you know, the bar was brand new. The country was new. The you know, it was an interesting period, interesting part of history.
One word that I would use to describe that time, and particularly probably ended around 1998 or so, I think, is when things, I don't know, started becoming normalized. But one word I would use to describe it is like maybe decadent. And I was just wondering, did you ever get the impression that it was, you know, sometimes it might have been, to get the sense that it was like kind of spoilt or rich Westerners using Prague as a playground, or was there more to what was going on back then than that?
The Czechs were being decadent too. I mean, it wasn't just us. You know, there's been some pretty major, like, I guess, you know, paradigm shifts that have taken place in this culture. And each one put a little bit more fear into the eyes of the average Czech person. And one of them, I think the first one that happened was, let me think, what were the ones that happened? Well, all the fashion mags and the magazines on how to live your life. That was the first thing that started to change the Czech society. All the Elle's and Cosmopolitan and GQ, da da da. Then the major ones were when splatky or leasing came in, and then the mortgages, and then all the subsequent fear that they had in their lives to be able to pay back that car and that house and the flat and the vacation. But up to that point, you know, that happened all, like, it started happening in 95, then 96, 97. But like you say, by 98, the decadent lifestyle of the Czechs and of the foreigners had pretty much disappeared. I mean, we still get up to a little bit of it, but not like it was back in the day. But really, I mean, when you went down into Repre Club at 4 in the morning on a Tuesday night, and there was hundreds and hundreds of people going mad, it wasn't all foreigners. A lot of them were locals. And if you allow people to be decadent, I think, you know, it's the entropy inherent in human behavior, is that we would like to be decadent if we could, you know. So, yeah. And back in those days, you could. It didn't matter.
In the 90s, there was occasional stories of, like, mafia protection rackets going on around businesses and everything like that. Did you have any run-ins with people like that who used to operate here in the 90s, you know, particularly from places like Ukraine and Russia?
Well, we had a few little things happen here and there, but, I mean, never anything really serious. Typically, in this town, the Ukrainian mafia extorts money out of Ukrainians, the Russians out of Russians, the Vietnamese out of Vietnamese, etc., and the Serbs out of the Montenegrins, whatever. But as far as me as a North American, I had a couple little skirmishes with sort of like petty criminals from, I don't know, one guy was Yugoslavian, one guy was Ukrainian or something, and basically we just sicked the big bouncers on them, and they beat them up, and then I never saw them again. But if there was real serious mobsters, I never saw them. Just typically, I don't even remember anybody, you know, of any of the foreigners who were running bars saying that they had any problem with mafia. I know it happens with the Yugoslavians and the other nationalities that are here, and it's usually by their own countrymen, but not to us, no.
But you actually ran a pretty crazy nightclub in Obecný dům, which is like one of the most prestigious buildings in Prague.
We took it over, and we must have spent 2 weeks just cleaning. It was unbelievable how disgusting it was. We were hiring pretty much exclusively Bosnian refugees who were on the run from the war. And so we had about 25, 30 Bosnian people in the kitchen, and they were Bosnian Serbs and Bosnian Croats and all sorts. It was this big hodgepodge, but everybody had one thing in common, that was they wanted to get the hell away from it. And we hired a lot of these guys because they're really good workers. And we put them to work for the first week or 10 days, just cleaning the kitchen and the front of the cafe, which then we opened immediately. We had a 300-seat cafe with a martini bar upstairs. We put a pool hall in the back of it. And then downstairs we had that huge nightclub, which was going gangbusters every night.
Was it not totally inappropriate to have a business like yours in such a famous building as Obecný dům, or the Municipal House as it's called in English, like, which is considered to be one of the architectural jewels of Prague?
Actually, you know, in retrospect, we did nothing to the... It was all really funny because they tried to charge us for some damages to the building, and nothing bad. I mean, nothing, you know, maybe a broken door handle or something here or there. And the whole place was kitted out with this beautiful original Art Nouveau chandeliers, everything, the stained glass windows, everything. And I was always trying to make sure that nothing got damaged because it's all historical, you know, historically preserved stuff. And then they did the reconstruction. Of course, those guys ripped everything out. Everything got stolen, right? Everything, just the Czechs stole everything. And then they got some new guys for gazillions of crowns to make models of it all, you know, but it's all gone. Everything that was in there, all the cool stuff is gone. And they replaced it with stuff that is, you know, nowhere near as nice as far as craft goes, or style or quality. So it kind of gets me upset thinking about it, really, because we did quite a lot for that building, and we cleaned it up and we tried to look after it, and then at the end of the day the Czechs just ripped everything out and, you know, gutted it and then rebuilt it with inferior quality stuff.
Your Repre Club and the adjacent Thirsty Dog were only open for about 18 months before they were closed down by the city so the premises could be reconstructed. Despite being open for such a short time, both establishments are still talked about today as focal points of all the crazy things that were going on in post-communist Prague. Is that a reputation that's justified?
It was quite a roller coaster. We had a lot of famous people come through. Allen Ginsberg did some poetry reading there. We had Nick Cave hanging out in our bar. He wrote a song about it, "Thirsty Dog," on the "Let Love In" album in 1994 or five, I think. We had Joey Strummer played in our club from the Clash, and ended up we had a big party for him, and we all got drunk on a bunch of archived wine. So it was quite an exciting time.